Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Epicenter podcast. We have taken a bit of a break. I think we recorded the last episode right towards the end of last year with the architect, Chris Boss. And we took a break because, as many of you know, Max and I both work on the Prospera project on a day-to-day basis. And we've got a lot of exciting things going on with Prospera. We are making very good progress, and it is very time-consuming and time-demanding. So this is the first opportunity we've had to kind of sit down and get back to the podcast, and we're excited to pick our regular schedule back up. And with that, today we are speaking with Gabriel Delgado. He is a founding member of the Prospera team, importantly, which we'll discuss more in detail later, a citizen of Guatemala, and a lifelong entrepreneur. Gabe is passionate about catalyzing prosperity in the poorest nations of the world while simultaneously spurring technological innovation. He's a father of four, an ultramarathoner, a lover of the outdoors, and a techno-futurist slash techno-optimist just like myself. I'll say anecdotally, I know Gabe and I talk all the time about what awesome technologies are on the future, like anti-aging and stuff, and we'll actually get to that later. So with that, welcome to the Epicenter, Gabe.
Thank you very much for having me, guys. I'm very excited to be here.
Hey, Gabe, welcome. Welcome here in Broughton, here in Honduras. And it's great to have the first episode almost live, I think. And before we get to the Prospera questions, I would like to know a little bit of your background. I know that you have several past companies that you founded and run it. And what can you tell me a little bit more of those companies and what are your thoughts and why your how you put your a little bit of piece of sand that of those companies?
Sure. So I graduated as an engineer from university, but I never practiced engineering any days of my life. I kind of went directly into sales because what I liked was providing people with solutions to problems that I perceived that they had. And so my first and only stint working for a company that wasn't my own or that wasn't involved in the founding of lasted for about 3 years. And the bug of entrepreneurship really bit me hard because I believed that I could bring something new to the market. And to be honest with you guys, it probably was hubris, a lot of hubris. I mean, it probably wasn't bringing any real value at the time, but that really set me on a path of actually providing value to the market. So I started my first company when I was probably around 24. And that was a small, enterprise. I was buying and selling, believe it or not, software on diskettes called Shareware. A lot of people on the podcast probably will never know what that was, but I sure do. I guess I just given away my age. But that turned into, the first big technology venture that I had, which was a co-founded IT security software company for Central America and parts of South America. And we were really, the value we were adding was introducing a lot of new tech into a region that wasn't really, that didn't really have it, but had the problems associated with not having it. And good luck or bad luck, who knows, I was able to sell it about 6 years after I started. I became, I think, foolish enough to think that, I was just going to touch anything and it was going to be gold. And then I failed for about three successful ventures. So that was a good humbling experience because it really showed me that it wasn't that I was smart. It was that I had worked hard. And then I went back and I founded two more companies. One of which still exists, another of which I sold. And at that point, I'd been very passionate about technology most of my life because I thought that this was a way of leapfrogging a lot of the problems that plagued my part of the world, Central America and Guatemala. So I thought if we bring technology, we will solve a lot of these problems without having to change the system in which the problems are created. And a good example of that was Skype. Another example of that was cell phones. So we could bypass the whole local government-owned telecommunications providers, which were really, really bad, and basically didn't grow. You know, in 10 years, they may have grown 1 to 2%. And suddenly, with these technologies coming online, they were impacting, you know, millions of people. So I was looking at technology as a way to leapfrog a lot of these problems, because what I've always been passionate about is I've always thought that if we had the right environment, we could catalyze the brilliant minds that our people in this region have to be really part of the world community and solving the world's problems. And that, of course, brought me to Prospera and what we're doing here.
Awesome. Thanks for that, Gabe. And a follow-up on that, I'm curious, you founded a handful of ventures, and I know some of them are, or a lot of them are in the tech space. What do you think is the kind of the underlying thread or the underlying philosophy that ties all of those firms together? Even though they were in disparate industries, you're clearly working toward something specifically. What was driving you? What was the thread under all of them?
Yeah, what's the thing that drives me the most is, I think I've been very fortunate in my life. I'm very privileged to have the education that I have and the, if you want, the access to opportunities. And I looked around and I always thought, why do I have that privilege and others, you know, others don't have it. And so the driving factor, you know, if I look deeply enough beyond the product itself, the driving factor to me was always, let's get opportunities to more people. Let's get opportunities to more people. And, you know, I'm actually super proud that a lot of the people that were my first hires are now entrepreneurs in their own right. They've done extremely well. They've provided a lot of opportunities for others. And you know, it's interesting because what I'm proud of is not the fact that I sold the company. I'm proud of the fact that I can look at this guy who is now my friend, who was my first employee, and he's now an entrepreneur and he's kicking ass, you know? And I'm thinking, well, this guy, now he knows what it is to be somebody that perhaps wouldn't be able to be on this path, who is now on this path, and now he can be a multiplier as well. So I think the underlying factor is, how do I become a multiplier? And always do it ethically, because, you know, you can do this unethically too. So I think that's what it is to me. And I'll tell you something, if we can create a ton of value in Prospera, and I mean a ton, I mean, if we can look anything like Dubai in a few years, what that will mean for the prosperity and opportunities and the cascading effect that this will have in this region is just unimaginable. And that really drives me.
I completely agree. And we'll get to more details on Prospera here in just a little bit. But as kind of a segue in that direction, I'd love to hear more about, Gabe, kind of the intersection between governance institutions and entrepreneurship in Central America. So specifically, as an entrepreneur who has founded several ventures, what were the kind of the highest friction points or the aspects of governance in Central America that made it particularly hard for you that might not have been the same, say, if I were an entrepreneur in the US?
Sure. I have a few good examples. You know, the most amazing thing to me was one day, probably about 7 years into my third venture, I get a call from the tax officials, and they said, you are now a what would you call it? A special you're now a special tax payer. And I thought, okay, so what does that mean? Am I special because I'm now paying enough taxes to be considered worthy of being permanently supervised? And that was exactly what it meant.
What was the term in Espanol?
In Espanol was contribuyente, I think it was contribuyente especial.
So what did that mean for you? How did that impact you?
Yeah, so I thought, well, at first, you know, I read the note. I was like, wow, you know, I feel pretty proud of myself. You know, I'm now special. And what special meant was that I got to have an auditor almost permanently supervising my books. And it really annoyed me because, you know, one thing that I've prided myself in is doing things correctly, doing things ethically. You know, even if I don't agree with the law, I'm going to comply with the law. Because I think that the struggle of going the long route and getting things changed rather than trying to skip through unethical means is more destructive than actually complying with the law. So here I was being treated in a special way, and what it meant that now I had to turn my financial team to basically provide information to these guys who were basically permanently looking for ways that we had slipped up. Why? So they could get, multas. Multas is just fees that were, they were just trying to bill us for fees that we'd slipped up. And that was super, super annoying. And especially because I was trying to do things the right way. And I just thought, look, if people are crooks, they should be persecuted by the law. But if people aren't crooks, then they should be left alone to do things in the best way possible. And that became one of the driving forces. And I saw it also, in simple things such as permitting for buildings. I'm not involved in construction, but I have a lot of friends that are. And they would tell me, oh man, my license, my permit to get my building up, I've been at it for a year and a half. A year and a half. Why? Is there any reason? No, it's just, bureaucracy or, people taking time or maybe somebody, shuffling papers and putting it at the bottom of the pile. So, it's interesting because I think government is a key service to the generation of prosperity. It is. It's a key service. But it can also be a huge obstacle. And I think in our part of the world, that opacity generates risk that locals can deal with in a way, but foreigners would never want to deal with. And that's where the concept of country risk comes from.
You put in context something very interesting. And it's about the region. I don't know if you many know, I'm from Honduras. Gabe, you're from Guatemala, and we know the concerns that it happened in Central America. Why do you think that is the things here are so ineffective and inefficient in Central America compared to the US or Europe?
Well, I think that
special governance.
Yeah. Believe it or not, I think it goes back to ethics. And the reason why humanity as a species was able to emerge from poverty, from systemic poverty to prosperity over the last 250 years is because we developed an ethical framework, and the ethical framework revolved around creating a system of rule of law, and then having a system that could solve disputes if somebody infringed upon that system. And so I think what happens in this part of the world is we Latinos, we're super friendly, and we're, hey, you're my buddy, don't screw me. And, I'll take you out to lunch. We'll have a couple of drinks. We'll talk about, projects and our families, or maybe my girlfriend or your girlfriend, or we'll just talk about things that we have in common. And so when a problem arises that, for example, somebody on the other side needs to participate in solving, they'll feel less inclined to solve it against me, who am their friend. Whereas I think that there is a tradition, an ethical tradition around more, if you want, Anglo cultures, that where you said you were going to do this and you have to do this. And you're my friend, but that has nothing to do with getting it done, right? And so, so I think what happens is that our culture, culturally, that thing which is so nice about the Latin culture that we can be friends and joke around and blah blah blah, also has a dark side to it, which is it's really hard to uphold rules. If I mess up, if you're my friend and I hire you to build a building and you do a bad job of it, and we're friends, I feel really bad about going to you and saying, hey, you messed the building up. But I shouldn't be, right?
Yeah.
So
100%.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And it's especially interesting to me because in the academic literature, researchers won't touch culture with a 10-foot pole because not only is it a lightning rod, they can't like put it in numbers and empirically measure it. So they just act like it's not there. But as you just described, it's one of the biggest determinants of either prosperity or poverty. And with that kind of understanding of the governance issues of Central America front and center, what drove your interest in and how did you find out about the concept of special economic zones and the type of special jurisdiction work we do at Prospera?
Yes. You know, I can't claim any brilliance of my own. My grandfather founded a university in Guatemala, and I think he was a brilliant thinker. I was just his grandson. And so I learned a lot about him, and I participated with him a little bit in trying to bring about systemic change in Guatemala through changes to the constitution. And basically what we really wanted to do was de-risk the country. And, you know, we basically de-risk the country by having a strong system of a strong judicial that can, you know, adjudicate court cases. And we failed massively. And then I read Machiavelli and I realized that when you try to change a system in which everybody is involved, nobody really wants you to change it because one way or another, they're living off of it. So I was quite discouraged by that failure. And that was around 2007. And before that, I participated in different forums. I wanted to participate, I wanted to support political parties to get people that I thought were good in the power, and that failed. So I participated in a lot of initiatives that failed. And in about 2009, the president, who is now deceased of UFM, a gentleman called Giancarlo Ibarguen, told me about the possibility of creating jurisdictions within countries that basically allowed for one country, two different types of systems as a way to import best of class or best regulatory systems. That's not the word I'm looking for, but just things that worked, you know, things that worked in other countries that you could import into a small space. And if it worked and that's fancy, then you can export it to the rest of the country. And I thought, wow, this has got to be the most brilliant idea, especially because I saw it as a way that I could combine two of my passions, which was the ability to reform so that people could be entrepreneurs and solve problems. So it was reform to allow entrepreneurship. And I love both. I love entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship is one of the things that drives me the most, helping others become successful through solving third parties' problems. So that's how I became involved. And I've been involved since 2009, in one way, shape or form, moving it forward until, you know, we finally founded Prospera back in 2017 or so.
Yes. And talking about all those histories, I would like to know, especially the one that you and Eric came together and found Start Prospera. And as may you, if you don't know anything about who is Eric, I recommend you to go to the first episode of the Epicenter podcast, and you'll find the history of the CEO of the company, Andres Prospera. And we have here the co-founder of, I would love to know your perspective of the other side of Prospera.
Yeah. Well, for those of you who have known Eric personally, and those of you who know Eric through the podcast, he's a very interesting and driven person. And so I met Eric because at the time, I think in and around 2014, Eric had founded was a company that was looking to build a portfolio of these types of jurisdictions around the world. And his idea was, we need to strengthen the ecosystem of jurisdictions around the world because they will become the showcase that allows other countries to then reform for prosperity. And we, at that time, another group that I was involved with, we had a project that was ongoing and we were a potential target of investment for Eric and his group. So, you know, Eric and I started talking and we had a very long phone call. Then we had a follow-up, and then Eric came down to Honduras and Roatan, and he met with a bunch of people. But I think the bottom line is that we hit it off because we had the same values and the same principles and the same perspective, and even some of the same background in terms of our frustration with wanting to get things done in this part of the world. So it was Eric's merit that he turned around and said, look, rather than me invest in your company, given where the ecosystem is, that it's so young, there's not a lot of real opportunities. I think what really needs to happen is for one of these things to be massively successful. So why don't you and I join forces and create a new company that's going to get this done? And that's the genesis of Prospera. And I remember we were sitting around in I was negotiating the property we're now in Austin. And we were sitting around after dinner. And you know, Eric, I think it was 12:30, and he was still going strong. And I was basically falling asleep on the spot. And you know, he kept going and going and going. And I was like, dude, I'm so tired, I can't think anymore. But in the end, you know, woke up the next morning and we hammered away a bit of a napkin-based deal and started, and it's been a great experience.
Awesome. I love hearing that story, even though I've heard it 100 times, it gets me excited every time. Well, related to that, Gabe, you kind of alluded to a little bit there, and we beat around the bush a little bit. I have a 2-part question. First, in your own words, what exactly is Prospera? What is it we're doing? And then what makes Prospera any different from the Cologne Free Zone or the Cayman Islands or these other special jurisdictions in the region?
Okay, so let me try to give you an answer that is very, very high level and one that's really grounded. So the very high level one is that, and I'll do it from an entrepreneur's perspective. So you're an entrepreneur and you want to grow your business. You're doing super well in your home turf. So basically, you look around. If you look in the States, it's a very deep market, so you don't really need to go anywhere. But maybe you're a global company and you're looking to expand, or maybe you're looking to outsource your production facilities, or you're looking to outsource some of the services you provide or whatever, or you're a company in the region in Central America or in Mexico and you're looking to expand. So you raise your head and you say, where am I going to go next? And you begin to explore these countries. And the thing that keeps popping up is country risk, country risk, country risk. And you think Argentina, huge country risk. You think Brazil, huge country risk. You think Ecuador, huge country risk. You think Venezuela, massive country risk. Then you look at the Central American countries and risk, 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 risk. And it's not your operational risk that as an entrepreneur you manage with your team and with managing resources. It's external risk. It's risk based upon the country where you're gonna set up operations. So what I think Prospera is doing is we are de-risking the part of the world in which we're establishing, from not the operations of the company, but the environment into which the company is setting up. And that's huge because you get loans based on country risk. Your return on investment is impacted by country risk and the regulatory environment in which you're involved. Because if you set up with a certain set of taxes and those are changed, then your ROI changes. So there are all these factors that impact what you're really trying to do, which is add value, but get a return at the same time. I mean, it's one with the other. Otherwise, the incentives are misaligned. And so from a very, very high level, what we're doing is we're just de-risking. We're anywhere we set up, we're de-risking it and making it easy for people to set up and easy for people to operate and for people to have predictability long-term. From the perspective of the entrepreneur setting up in locally, what we're doing is we're allowing the entrepreneur to have a higher return. And we're allowing the entrepreneur to have a higher return because our operations and our incentive structure and the way we are set up for our own survival requires us to be very, very efficient in the provision of services, meaning that for the governance services rendered, we can provide those at a much lower cost. So at the end of the day, what that means is after I've run through my sales, my cost of sales, my general and administrative costs, what I get at the end, my EBITDA, I have to subtract less of cost of government. And so I get to keep more. And what that does, so let me get down to the real punch of that. What that does is allows me to grow. And if I can grow, I can hire more people, right? And where am I going to make the investment? Where it's easier for me to do that, so I can hire more people. And then those people are going to see what I'm doing and they're going to want to copy me. And maybe they're going to think, well, this guy isn't solving that problem, so I'll go do my own company. And you begin to get this super powerful virtuous circle happening of people wanting to come here to create opportunity and add value, rather than wanting to leave to find opportunity and create value elsewhere, which is basically what's happening at a rate of about 100,000 people a year just in the Northern Triangle of Central America.
100%. And I think that you said interested word, and is create value and bring opportunity. I think that is the governments, especially here in Central America, are lack of effective. They are very inefficient. And how do you think that Prospera solved, or what is the cherry of the cake of Prospera that is trying to solve those issues that you find in Central America governments?
Well, I think the underlying problem I think we have, not just in the region, but definitely in the region, is that the governments, I mean, you can have the most well-intentioned person arrive at a position of power in government, be it president, and they just can't get much done because politics is a zero-sum game, meaning that if I create a project and it's positive, my opponent can't say it's positive because that means he won't get elected, right? And so if there's a good idea out there, even if it's a great idea, the only way my opposition will support it if it's a life and death matter. So at the time the Zetas were created, Honduras was in a life and or death struggle to survive. And so the whole country got together, politicians got together and pushed it forward. But the problem is that in most cases, that's not what's happening. What's happening is I need to get elected. I want my quota of power, because that's why I exist. That's what motivates me. And then if you have a great idea, I have to go against it. And so anytime I want to get something passed, anytime I want to get something approved, I have to either convince the opposing party that it's going to be good for them, which is super hard, or I have to provide other types of favors. I have to provide, okay, look, you approve this and I'll let you have a road so that you can, you know, satisfy your constituents or whatever. So I think the incentive structure of politics is bad. And I think because it's a zero-sum game, it doesn't allow for the type of progress that we need. And I think it's gotten worse and worse and worse because the world has gotten more and more ideological. And so you have people on social media that can really opine and change the direction of things are going, not because they're based on principle, but they're based on emotional and perceived injustices. And people don't take the time to really dig deeply into it. So I think that whole incentive structure is not well organized versus our incentive structure. Our incentive structure is quite interesting because Prosperous and other projects, we cannot capture anybody. Meaning that if you come and set up a business here and we don't serve you well as a client, you are going to grab your stuff and you're going to leave. So we are subject to market pressure, just as, you know, telecommunications companies are, restaurants are, hotels are, any services are. And therefore, if you serve your market poorly, basically you're going to run out of customers. If you're a country, you're always a citizen of that country. So I can serve you as poorly as I want. You have to remain. And that incentive is massively powerful. We compete not only with the national government for the provision of services, we compete with other types of jurisdictions around the world in the region. And we have to do a super good job to try to keep our clients happy. So our incentive structure is super aligned with keeping, you know, our users, if you want, our clients happy.
You put that perfectly, Gabe. That's exactly how I like to describe it as well. Those incentives are really what drive the actions of both public politicians and private entrepreneurs. And a lot of the time, people like to put on rose-colored glasses and assume that politicians, just by very nature of their work, are completely immune to the incentives that drive everyone else. And that's simply not the case.
Can I ask something about that real quick?
Yeah, please.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I think that I've seen this over and over. A lot of people on the outside of politics are very frustrated with our systems. And so they enter politics because they think, if only I were in power, I would fix things, right? And there's a couple of fallacies in that. First is to think that you really have a lot of power while in office. It turns out, I think you have very little power, especially in this part of the world. You just seem to have a lot of power. In reality, you have very little power. Then you have the weakness of human beings and the seduction of power. And the one ring of Sauron is very strong living amongst us in the region. So if you're a fan of Tolkien, you know that the ring of power is this force for seduction. And so I think it's very strong. And once you have power, it's hard to relinquish, and especially in politics, where most people don't challenge you, but support even your craziest ideas. I think it's a system that not only whose incentives are poorly aligned, but it's a system that it's very hard to resist. I mean, I don't think I could resist it. Very few people could resist it, to go in there and have all of that power, all of that adulation going on. I think you would eventually succumb.
Completely agree. And we've seen it too many times with idealistic politicians who seem awesome until they get into office. Then they do the same things everyone else does.
Boom. Yeah,
so that's exactly right. So I've got two questions for you, Gabe. The first one, to return to a little bit of my earlier question, but to ask it a little different way. Let's say I'm an entrepreneur in the region. Why in the world should I come to Prospera instead of, say, go to Grand Cayman, where they already have a light regulatory touch? They have a low kind of competitive tax rate, already operating on UK common law. Or why shouldn't I go to the Cologne Free Zone, where I can get I can export and import and move the logistics of my goods with little to no interference, low regulatory overhead, low taxes? Why should I come to Prospera instead?
Well, I mean, I think the beauty of this is you have options to start with. So you can go to any one of those places. And, you know, maybe some of those places will serve you better. I think the biggest reason to come to Prospera, or not the biggest, there's a couple of really nice ones. I mean, I think we're just as competitive from a tax perspective. We're definitely just as competitive from a regulatory perspective. I think that one of the biggest differences of Prospera and all the other jurisdictions, including other free zones around the world and in the region, is our incentive structure, which we just alluded to a little while ago. So we, you know, most other jurisdictions there's an expiration date to them, meaning you might have a free zone that gives you 5 years, 10 years of no income tax, but after 10 years, you're going to have to jump some hoops to get back into the game of zero taxation. Or, you know, after 10 years, you don't know if they're going to renew the license of the free zone. Or after 10 years, you know, they may say, yes, we're going to continue with a free zone, but now we're going to raise your minimum wage. And so what we provide, I think that's very unique, is the ability to have what we call a stability agreement contract, which basically allows you to know for a predetermined period of time what the conditions of your setting up in the regions are going to be. So what we provide you is predictability. And most entrepreneurs don't have predictability and want predictability, especially on the governmental side. And so I think that is, I mean, at the end of the day, what we want as entrepreneurs is to know what the rules are so we can follow the rules. And then after we follow the rules, to be left alone to innovate and create value. That's what we want. And I think we're particularly good at that. You know, we're still young and very young. I mean, we're newly born, if you think of it in terms of regions. But we have the makings of really the best jurisdiction in the world. And so you can have the perspective as an entrepreneur. I'm going to wait till they're ready to go there and do something. And some entrepreneurs will be like that. And others will be like, wow, they're just starting up. This is the best time to come because now I can start with them to create the value that I want to see in the world. And especially if they perceive Prospera as what it is, which is a platform on top of which entrepreneurs and investors and people in general who want to live and have better opportunities can come and set up. So I think that we provide a very, very, very unique ecosystem that's different probably from most everything out there in the world to allow for entrepreneurs to set up. And now the onus is on us to really get the word out and to get people excited so they will come. But our experience so far is once people begin to grasp the power of what we're doing, you know, they go from, wow, that's amazing, to, okay, how am I going to make this work for me?
That's exactly right. And speaking of that, kind of bringing other firms in and making it work for them, I know, as I mentioned earlier in the introduction, you're also kind of a technological optimist like me and love kind of those bleeding edge of human progress.
Yeah.
So let's put on our future facing glasses and our wishful glasses really quickly, Gabe. What do you think is the one industry or firm or technology that has the highest likelihood to change the course of human history and would most benefit from setting up in Prospera tomorrow?
Just one? Because I can think of a bunch.
Do a couple of them.
All right. So I think that if you look at the world historically, what has happened is that we have a dominating civilization. It goes up, it goes up, it dominates, and then there's a crash, right? You look at Greece, then you look at Rome, you look at the Persians, you look at, the French, you look at the English. So there's always this up and down, up and down, up and down. And the problem is human nature and this desire to use power to do what you think is right. And you end up getting into power. And it turns out that, all of your good intentions, you weren't able to do it. So I think one of the biggest, most powerful innovations that has the opportunity to change the world is the decentralization of power through blockchain technologies. So you think of organizations that can set up contracts where you don't need anybody to adjudicate them, but they adjudicate automatically. You think of systems where you can program, for example, a contract where I rent an apartment and if I don't make the deposit within 5 days, it locks my door automatically. You think of chat systems, kind of like what we use WhatsApp or whatever, that are decentralized and on the blockchain, meaning nobody can impede free speech. And that, of course, the applications of that can be good or bad, but free speech in and of itself is one of the principles on which our civilization is built. There's the impact of, there's a bunch of impacts, some of them which are hard to fathom, but the ability to take power out of individuals' hands and distribute them in a way where you don't need trust anymore to have these things happen is so powerful. And I think it's something that really can withstand any downturn in civilization. So that's a huge one. And I'm a very big advocate and very, excited that is happening in my lifetime. Then the other is this longevity or rejuvenation aspect of life these days. So, a lot of people talk about death being just the accumulation of disease. And as you begin to solve each disease, suddenly, you don't die of that. So therefore you live longer and you live longer and you live longer. And so I think a zone like ours, for example, is super interesting because you are able to innovate at a pace that is quicker to basically to solve for those diseases that currently impact our loved ones, elderly or people that are at high risk. So I think our zone solves for a lot of the friction in innovation on the medical frontier. And so those are two of the very, very big ones. But I think that, any technology that benefits from a regulatory environment that allows for innovation and stresses responsibility of those innovating can benefit from us. For example, I think that were self-driving cars starting now, the ideal place to come and test self-driving cars would be here, because we have that type of environment. So all these things are going to benefit humanity can be done out of Prospera. I mean, I can go on, but I'll leave it at that.
Gabe, let's go to the physical part of Prospera. Now we are in the beta building. What it means beta building, and what do you think is so important this building in particular?
Well, this building really represents the manifestation in physical form of a hypothesis of what was possible through the ZEDIS. So when we put together the regulatory environment in which we needed to operate, bound by the outlines of the law that allows for these jurisdictions to exist, we hypothesized that we would be able to build buildings, to have people use our system to set up companies, et cetera. So the beta building represents the first building to be built wholly using a Prospera's regulatory environment, Prospera's permitting, Prospera's labor law, Prospera's environmental law, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And using local entrepreneurs and losing local materials and using local labor. So it was a bit of using our system while at the same time sourcing from the local population, all of those resources that we needed to make it happen. And having finished the beta building is the manifestation that this can be done. It's what we call in English, the proof of concept. It proves that what we're doing can be done at scale, not just in a little tiny building, which we did. I mean, it's tiny compared to a bunch of standards, but to me, it's a towering achievement. It's like that small step for mankind and that huge leap for man and that huge leap for mankind. That is what I feel the beta building represents. And not just for us, but for people on the island looking for more opportunity, or people on the mainland looking for more opportunity, because to them, this platform existing here means that they potentially don't have to leave to look for opportunity elsewhere.
Awesome. I love it, Gabe. And we've just got, we're almost running out of time here, so we've only got two more questions for you. I've got one, and then Max, I'm going to let you ask him the final billboard question that we ask everyone. So Gabe, speaking of a leap for humankind, let's imagine for a second that it's 30 years from now, and you're even older than you already are. Let's hope you make it that long.
Hopefully around.
Yeah, exactly. At that time, what does Prospera look like, and how has it impacted Central America?
30 years, right? Well, first of all, I think that here's the scenario I see. Prospera is set up to be a multiplier. And what does that mean in practical terms? So currently Honduras attracts about $1 billion to $1.2 billion in foreign direct investment. And local Hondurans don't have enough savings to pull the country out of poverty, the same as Guatemalans and most of the rest of the countries in Latin America. So we need foreign direct investment. So Prospera is set up to attract 10 times to 20 times more investment by virtue of the fact that we can de-risk the spaces that we're in. So I think what will happen in the current location of Prospera, which we call St. John's Bay, is that we're going to have a thriving you know, 40,000, 50,000 strong community. But on the mainland, where we have other physical locations, we will probably be driving somewhere upward of a million people between the different locations. And they'll be hired in all types of industries, manufacturing, services, the medical industry. And Honduras will become a powerhouse of service delivery, of exports, and of innovation. And it'll be the wonder of the region. I mean, I'm thinking this is within 10 years. So what's going to happen then is the rest of the countries of Central America are going to say, damn, I better get my act together. I'm going to be left behind. And so the guy that was at the back of the pack is going to leapfrog to the front of the pack. The rest of the guys in Central America are going to have to get their act together so that when they see $10 billion, $50 billion of direct foreign investment going into Honduras and they're getting just one, they're thinking, this is crazy. What are you doing? We need to reform to get this done. So what's going to happen then is we're going to have more prosperous in other countries in the region. And then we're going to have African countries say, how can I get this done in Africa? Or how can I get this done in other countries of Asia that haven't had the opportunity to get it done? So I think what I think in the future is I see an ecosystem of the insertion of the right conditions to generate massive amount of prosperity around the world. And we're going to be the catalyst. I mean, and why are we the catalyst? I mean, it's interesting because really what we're doing already exists. It exists in Dubai. It exists in Singapore in a way, though it's its own country. It exists in Hong Kong. But all of those initiatives weren't started by private entrepreneurs. They were started by public entrepreneurs, if you want. And that requires public policy. And we just talked about how difficult that is to implement. So the fact that private individuals or private companies or private promoters can start these allows for them to really spread fast. And by the way, what I expect is for us to have a lot of competitors. I expect people to look at us and say, I'm going to do what they're doing better. And that's going to make us better because we're going to have to operate at a higher level of efficiency. And entrepreneurs are going to go knocking on the government, on the governmental doors of other countries saying, look at what these guys are doing in Honduras. We need to do it. And maybe we'll partner with them or maybe they'll compete with us. But I see a cluster of these. And I believe that there's a real opportunity in the future of a cluster of these types of jurisdictions around the world that are adding value at a scale and at a rate that's unprecedented in human history.
That's amazing, Gabe. I think that I'm truly inspired about this concept. That's the most powerful thing that you can tell to a young guy that is trying to have success in the life. And we're finally getting to the billboard question. It's a question that we do on all the podcasts. And basically, is if you have the opportunity to put anything that you want, an image, a video, a phrase, whatever you want, in all the billboards in the world, what it will be?
In all the billboards of the world, I think this is, it's not mine, but I will say it. It's be responsible. If everybody was responsible, we wouldn't have any pollution. Nobody would steal. Everybody would respect other people's property. We would have civilization. I mean, what derives from being responsible is civilization. And so that is what I would put on a billboard. And maybe right beside it, I would put, there is no try, do. What is it that Yoda says, Trey? You know it better than I.
There is no try. There is only do.
There is only do. There you go. That's the other one.
I love it, Gabe. I love it. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining the podcast today. This has been fantastic. And to everyone out there listening, thank you so much. This has been the Epicenter Podcast.
Thank you, guys.